SBS Radio.
Dusty Rose has an extensive background in sales, promotion, training and public speaking and emotional coaching. She also has in-depth knowledge and experience as a permanent carer and is a celebrant who specializes in forever family ceremonies and funerals. Dusty is also the fourth mother of permanent care siblings who exited foster care to the permanent care program in Victoria when they were three and 4 years old. Now, Dusty has just released two books, and I'm glad I've had my hands on both copies. These books are actually a guide for adoptive parents and carers to understand the monster in a child's mirror. Dusty Rose, welcome to NITV Radio.
Thank you, Bertrand.
Now, unpack for us, what is a monster in a child's mirror?
The monster is actually shame, a lack of self-belief and a lack of self-esteem, where they don't believe in themselves and they constantly blame themselves for the conditions in which they found themselves. So when children come up through the foster care or the adoption program for example, my children are I'm their fourth mother. And you try having four mothers by the time you're 4 years old. How confused do you think you would be? Yeah. Every 12 months they're interviewed, every 12 months they were introduced to new people and given away to a new home, to new people to call mum and dad. And it's very confusing because people say to them, they think everyone's a liar because you say you're going to keep me and you're going to keep me forever, but you keep giving me away. So they feel like garbage.
That's a truly terrifying thought for a little being. They're so small and they're thrown around between families, and this is terrifying for them.
Well, it's very confusing because they don't understand why this is happening to them and why is it that nobody wants to keep them? What is it about them that they are not good enough? Why can't they be loved? Why don't they deserve to be loved? And it's very, very hard for them to come to terms with, and they blame themselves. It must be me. I must have done something really bad. I must be a really horrible kid. I must be worthless because nobody wants me.
And sometimes these kids are told also that they're not loved.
Absolutely.
That, I'm being given away because, it's my fault, or maybe the parents where I had been previously don't like me.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's very confusing for them. So they live with this monster of emotions. The monster is actually shame and emotions, all of the emotions that they feel inside about themselves that they only share with their reflection in the mirror. Because the reality is, we all wear two faces. And this is where a lot of mental health issues come into play, because of the fact we're so busy showing the happy face to the world that we don't show people the true reflection. Because the true reflection is one of misery, and it's one that we only share with our own reflection in the mirror.
Hence the title, Monster in a Child's Mirror. But what prompted you to write this book?
Well, I fell into a really deep depression a few years ago. I was being bullied in the workplace, and I was feeling very triggered, and something happened and it just pushed me over the edge, because we basically, we bounce depending on how resilient we are at the time, and if we're vulnerable, we don't bounce. So I spiraled into a very deep depression, and my daughter started reaching out to me instead of me reaching out to her. And when that happened, she was desperately trying to reach me. And then I explained to her, when I started to snap out of it, that when we're triggered by something really traumatic, our brain becomes like a sponge. And we absorb every negative energy around us, and we assume that everyone is talking about us, even though the conversations have got nothing to do with us and they're not talking about us at all. We assume they are. And then we basically spin up and relive every negative thought that anyone's ever said about us, and we spin it all around our mirror. And we lock our brains into survival mode, and then we just keep reading over and over all of these things. I'm ugly, I'm horrible, I'm mean, I'm a waste of space. And then we believe that, and that becomes who we think we are. And they think that when somebody looks at them in the mirror, that's what they see. But it's only what the child sees or the traumatized person sees. It's not what the rest of the world sees. So I wrote the books to try and break the cycle when my daughter said to me, "Mummy, do you realize I hate myself?" And I'm like, whoa, okay, I need to deal with this.
So how do you react when a young child says, I hate myself?
Well, I reacted by writing her this book, and it was originally meant just for her. And it details all of the things that she thought and felt about herself. But by the same token, it's me talking to her, trying to help her realise that the monster that she sees is not what I see. It's not the beautiful, amazing child that I see. And to help her to break that cycle. But I showed it to her psychologist, and her psychologist went, wow, this helps us work as a fantastic tool to work with children and families with trauma. And I showed it to the school, and the school went, wow, this is really exciting. This helps us understand the minds of children with trauma. Because 1 in 30 today have had DHS intervention, which is pretty remarkable. And I was getting such a buzz out of it that I got asked to show it to a publisher. So I thought, all right, I'll take it to a publisher and see what they say. And most people said it takes 2 years for a publisher to respond, and my publisher responded in an hour. So I thought, wow, I've really got something here.
It's not just a book, it's a tool.
Yes, it is a tool, and I'm very excited to say it's been released worldwide. So it's not just released here in Australia.
Yeah, I have to say it's a book that's very, very easy to read. I had my chance to have preview copies, and I really went through it. Easy to read. The children's part of, because it's two books, we're talking about one book, it's two books.
Correct.
One for parents and one for children. It's very heavily illustrated, but very, very powerful illustrations. And the illustrations are by one of your...
They're by Alabadza.
Yeah, who is Ukrainian. So hence the book is being translated in so many languages. Now, give us a bit of an idea of how to read this book, because it's a guide, it's a tool. How do we use this tool?
With the children's book, it's very different, because what it does is it has speech bubbles around photos and the pictures, and the pictures are of a child who is deeply troubled inside a mirror, and they're crying in the mirror. And you know that you start at the bottom, so there's an orange bubble at the bottom of the page, and you start to the left of that orange bubble because you read that last. But it says things like, you know, I'm a liar. I feel ashamed all the time. I'm bad all of the time. I feel so ugly inside and out. And you read it all until you get to the bottom of the orange bubble. And then it says, you know, I am the monster in my mirror. So as you work your way through the book, the child starts to realize that they aren't the monster in their mirror. And I talk to them in conversation, like, for example, it says, you know, you're asking yourself questions, but you're not listening to the answers because you don't believe the answers are true, because you're asking yourself, what's wrong with me? And I say, well, it's really hard to feel like there's something wrong with you. Hopefully one day you'll see that you are special just the way you are. I'm really ugly and horrible. It's sad that you feel that way. Hopefully one day you'll see yourself the way that I see you, not as someone who is ugly and horrible, but as someone who is beautiful, both inside and out. So the book is actually designed to work with a parent or a carer so that the child reads all of the ugly things they feel about themselves, but the parent and carer keeps reinforcing all of the positive things that they see so that it helps the child to change their perspective about themselves. And it works its way through until you get to the end of the book and the child actually sees themselves as they really are and not that horrible emotional reflection they have in the mirror.
The wreck that they can see in their mirror. It's a journey. It's not something that... It's a journey. There are different steps. You start, even with the illustration, you start with a very sad face, and then as you progress, you get a better understanding of the child's inner feelings and thoughts, and you develop this rapport. It's a lot of actually interaction.
Well, it is. And like I said, I originally wrote that book for my daughter, but then I found myself keep writing, because the biggest problem that we have is when you adopt children with trauma, you know, you don't get an instruction manual with children in general, but children with trauma are so much more challenging in behavioural challenges and in not understanding how it is that you can actually help them. And the aim of the books is to enable adoptive parents, carers, psychologists, youth workers, teachers to be able to look at the children and step out of their own ingrained belief systems and take a walk in the child's shoes and see the world the way the child sees it. see the world the way that the things that the child hears when you say the things that you say, and to step back and reflect on what you're doing, because it might actually be more detrimental to the relationship than strengthening it. But the whole point of the book is to strengthen the bonds of attachment, to increase the child's trust, and to build your bond so strong and open a communication bridge, so every now and then when they peek out of that shame and that cycle mode, that you're there and you'll show them that you're prepared to walk with them and to help them through that journey.
Yeah, and one thing that really struck me is a story you relate about a child who is 4 years old only, but the child is so, I wouldn't say mature, but he's already developing this thought, this fear of losing their parent. They're already conscious of death. A four-year-old normally wouldn't think of death or be fearful of losing their parents. But you witnessed this, and you tell this story of a four-year-old who is scared their parent might die or might go away. This is a very terrifying thing for a little being at that age.
Well, that actually happened when the children first came to live with us, and it's because they'd already had four homes before ours, you know. So they were so confused. They were worried that if something happened to my husband and myself, what would happen next, because we promised to be their forever home, and they were afraid of what would happen to them if they were returned to the system, if we weren't around.
Terrifying thought for our little one. Time for a break, but stay with us, because when we come back, we continue the conversation with Darcy Rose, and we're talking about her books about how to understand the monster in a child's mirror.
Join the conversation on radio, online, and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Welcome back. Now we continue our conversation with our studio guest, Darcy Rose, who's just penned a set of books, A Guide for Adoptive Parents and Carers on How to Understand Kids with Trauma. Now, we've just been talking about a young child, a four-year-old, being already scared to lose their parent. How did you get this fear out of this little kid?
Well, I reinforced with her in this case, I reinforced to the children very quickly that if something happened to my husband or myself, that now they were part of a very large family, and the family would stick together, and that people would step up, and they would always be part of the family no matter what happened to us, and they would always remain within our family, so they wouldn't be going anywhere else except for within our family. And that gave them a lot of peace.
So reassurance is...
Yeah, absolutely.
How long did it take you to actually be able to get this ingrained in the little child and make them ease?
It's really hard to say. But, you know, when a child looks at you in the eyes and's patting you on the arm like a dog, and she said to me, "Mummy, I know it won't be your fault, Mummy. I know it won't be your fault. And I promise you, I won't blame you. But what happens if you die?" I mean, it's gut-wrenching, and, you know, tears running down. Yeah. Look, children with trauma, although sometimes they say they're developmentally delayed, I've got to tell you, more often than not, they are also very, very smart, and they are years ahead of a normal child. And I mean, I couldn't imagine a four-year-old asking me that question before, because most 20-year-olds wouldn't ask you that question.
Yeah, they're still just all they think about is just their toys and running around and playing. But these have already developed this thinking of a much more grown-up person.
Well, they do. They have a very inquiring and curious mind for a lot of advanced things. So it's confusing also that when they are traumatized, they regress to their emotional age. So you can have a child who is 10 or 12 years old, and this is what a lot of teachers have a lot of trouble with, is that you've got a very intelligent 10 or 12-year-old or 13-year-old in front of you, but they've been triggered and they regress to their emotional age, which is usually around 2 years of age. And if they had done the same behaviour issues as a 10 or 12-year-old, then you'd have a problem with it. But if you realise that they've regressed to the state of a 2-year-old, And if a two-year-old did that child, you know, did those things, you wouldn't question their behaviour because, hey, they're just two.
They're just a small kid.
But the way to rebuild new neural pathways is to go back with them to that age and help them step forward.
Yeah.
It's very, very confusing. So it's a challenging thing, which is why I wrote the books, to help other people who walk our path walk it with a little less difficulty than we walked it with ours. But, you know, trauma doesn't discriminate. And it's not just something that affects children. As we've seen in the mental health issues, you know, we've got epidemic proportions happening worldwide right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't discriminate. It doesn't care if you're rich, you're poor. It doesn't care if you're royalty. It doesn't care, you know, what religion you are. It doesn't care what colour your skin is. It is all about how you are mentally able to cope with something in time as it happens. If you're resilient, you'll bounce. If you're not resilient, then you'll take it to heart and you'll spiral it and you'll develop your own monster in your mirror.
Yeah, and what most people don't see is this trauma starts with these children who are in out of home situation. The trauma will follow them all their lives if not addressed, and it will lead to much worse outcomes.
Absolutely, and which is why I wrote these books, to help break the trauma cycle for people so that they could live a happier life. Now, 90% of people in jail today are there because they've got unresolved childhood trauma issues. 90%. Look, they make basically, when people live in their lizard brain or they live in their trauma cycle in shame, they make very poor choices because that brain was developed in utero. It does not think. It does not understand. It can never be taught. So they make very poor choices. And a lot of the time, because they can't handle what's happened to them in their life, they then head towards the path of addiction. So they turn to drugs, they turn to gambling. And then to feed those habits, they take another poor choice and they start robbing places, or they do things that end up in jail. And, you know, it's really, really sad, because as I tell my children, you know, it's just that it makes, you know, people are not born bad. It's just that they make poor choices depending on their circumstances. And, you know, they make good people make poor choices, and it's the poor choices that results in the issues that they have.
Issues, well, very, very terrible things can happen if these childhood traumas are not addressed. And one thing is, this book you had some consultation with really world leading experts from Australia, from the UK and the US, who helped develop some of the ideas that helped you actually go through your own situation and write this book, which is a guide for everyone else. One thing you just touched a few minutes ago was the states of the brain. Can you elaborate a little bit on that, because the lizard state and so many other states that...
Dr. Paul McLean from the US developed the triune brain theory, where, you know, there's three different levels to the brain. And, like, when we're traumatised, we head down to our lizard brain, which is developed in utero, and its only job is to keep the blood pumping and to basically keep us alive. It's survival mode. But that brain never learns. It's never taught. We don't start being taught until we're actually born. So, and then we learn, and we're taught all of these things. And when we are traumatised and triggered, we lock our brains into survival mode brain, which is the lizard brain. And because it can't learn and it can't talk, we can't communicate with it. So from a logical thinking brain, from a parent or from a teacher, we start talking to this child as if the child understands the logic that we're talking to them. But because they are locked in a different part of their brain, we actually can't communicate with them at all.
So communication is very, very, very important. Now, this book is for parents, carers, But trauma does not only affect people in those situations and dealing with trauma, it affects all of us. And last month, we were in Mental Health Month, but mental health and this kind of situation is something, well, we have 1 month a year to actually reflect on it, but it's ongoing for people living with it.
Well, absolutely. And you know, one of the big things that I'm finding that a lot of people are connecting with me with my books, you know, they have, you know, foster care adoption people, but a lot of people who have been bullied, people who have suffered domestic violence, people who have got depression, people who were suicidal. You know, I thought my next book was going to be The Monster in the Mirror for Suicide Prevention, but then I actually used them with somebody who was actively trying to kill themselves and realized that I don't need different books at all. All I need to use is teach people how to use the strategies that I have in the book in a different way.
And this worked for you in a situation. Tell us about this particular example, because this is something that really, really touched me. And it's something that many other people can relate to, not just, well, from all walks of life and all nationalities as well.
Absolutely. Okay, so I had an international student who came and stayed with us because we're a homestay family. And this young boy actively said to my husband and I that he was actually Googling how to kill himself. And, you know, we were pretty shocked. And what he said to me is that he was being severely bullied. He was only here in Australia for 4 weeks, but he said that he was being severely bullied at school and he was being tormented. And it wasn't just the students that were bullying him, it was the teachers. And I was really horrified by this. The teachers had told him that he was too dumb and stupid to be at school. The teachers had told him that he was a waste of space and a burden on society. And this poor kid believed it. So he told me all of these things. And then I said to him, I've got something I want to show you. And I opened my book, The Monster in My Mirror, Understanding the Monster in My Mirror. And I showed him. And there, printed on the page, it says, why am I so dumb and stupid? Why am I a waste of space? And this boy started crying. He had very broken English. And he said to me, I finally found someone. Someone who sees me. I have finally found someone who hears me. And I have finally found someone who understands me. And we just cried. The two of us just locked arms and we cried for about 10 minutes. And then I sat down with him and I started working on the strategies that I have in my books. And I started writing him positive messages every day. Positive messages to encourage him to have a good day and that the things that were going to get better. And every day and every night when he came home, I'd ask him how many positive step forward he took that day. And then I'd walk them out and we'd clap. And he was just so excited by that. And I got him to write down in a journal, because that's one of the things that I get to write in a journal. Because when we use art therapy or we write, we open doors without realizing we're doing it. And we instead of hiding everything that we do, we actually let little secrets out. So I clocked in on his little secrets and I worked with him and I got him to do the strategies in reverse to what I would normally do them in my book. And I got him to write down all of the things that he hated about the situation that he was in, all of the things that he felt sad about, and then all of the things that made him happy. And in doing that, he realized that he was loved and that maybe he'd taken things the wrong way. But he realized also that he wasn't a waste of space and that he wasn't a life that wasn't worth living. And I'm very proud to say this young man, he emails me every week to tell me how he's doing now.
Darcy Rose, thank you very much for taking the time to come to us and introduce us these beautiful guides, very useful tools for parents, carers and everyone.
Thank you for having me.
Enjoy more stories in your language by visiting sbs.com.au.